interests us are the administrative reforms behind the economic reforms in Egypt. And one question that I had was back in 2004 when the Ahmed Nazif government came in, you know, what were the key motivations for this reform? And, you know, what was the driving force behind the reforms? If we could start off with that.
Well, I think it's basically the conditions of the economy and the financial sector at the time that pushed the government of Egypt in July 2004 to get itself into a sort of a comprehensive reform program. So matters were not really looking good by using the conventional indicators. And it's not just the financial sector, it's the overall economic and development performance. Measuring Egypt to itself or measuring Egypt to its neighborhood mm-hmm. was basically showing that a lot is needed for the reforms. Growth was very low, ranging between 3 to 3.5% in real terms. This is basically a case of recession or stagnation for a developing country, especially that a developing country facing problems of dealing with poverty, high unemployment rates, low incomes. So you do not really have the luxury of growing at this low rate, especially that the population growth is and still high in the case of Egypt. So we need to do efforts for catch-up growth and for getting into the development policies fast.
And what were the main challenges, you know, facing the banking sector and, you know, the central bank internally at this time, would you say?
Well, it's basically the usual problems of developing countries, though that Egypt didn't really have what could be classified as a crisis as such. But there were varieties of problems: undercapitalization, low performance measured by return on income or equity or assets of the banks, very low competition levels. The system was not really able to meet the growing demands for credit. The system was very much overbanked and underbranched. But primarily, the case of the NPLs was very much worrying. This was well before the international financial crisis, and but immediately after the emerging markets crisis. So there were very lessons as well drawn from the emerging markets crisis of the Asian countries mm-hmm. of the 1990s.
And, you know, one question that I had in relation to the central bank is that I understand that a central banking law was passed in 2003 that really set the stage for ensuring the independence and regulatory authorities of the central bank, and that, you know, a new board of directors, a new governor and board of directors were appointed later in December of 2003. I was wondering if you have any information about this law and who was behind it and why it occurred at this time specifically.
Well, I was very much behind it myself,
yes.
Among others. I worked for a while as a senior advisor to the Minister of Economy and Trade. I was the chairman of the Economic Committee of the National Democratic Party, and I was a member of the Central Bank of Egypt at that time. So first started with the issue of independence from a note that was produced by the Ministry of Economy, and it was very much a unique case that government is pushing for the independence of the central bank in all aspects of its activities in the monetary policy front and in the bank supervision. I adopted that further through my work in the National Democratic Party. You will refer to the Egyptian newspapers, and this was basically before the time of the new management of the central bank, which was basically a blessing, because you can always have lows, but it's basically the power of implementation and coordination that makes laws of, with relevance. So we drafted that law in the National Democratic Party, and I was very pleased to say that it got good support by Parliament and government. And at the same time, it was one of the laws that didn't really say major changes in the drafting of articles, because it was very carefully designed. And it put the pillars and the anchors for applying independence. And all of the elements of independence of central bank are reflected in that law. All of the elements of corporate governance, information disclosure, and transparency were reflected there, given the central bank as well the authority for conducting monetary policy and applying the prudential regulation rules. We put a mechanism as well that sometimes it worked, sometimes it didn't, depending on priorities. It's basically the issue of coordination through institutionalization of coordination. I can always meet with you occasionally, informally, and coordinate if you are the central bank and I am the government. But to have regular meetings and to agree on targets, but leaving the central bank to conduct the monetary policy to achieve the targets of monetary policies were basically one of the main things that had been there in the law. Some of the provisions were in the law were made to be open-ended, because we understood from that time that there are many changes in the prudential regulation measure that should be within the power of the central bank to get them done.
Mm-hmm. And specifically, so this law was very much an effort that was spearheaded by the NDP's economic committee, is that correct? Or?
Well, there was some sort of understanding of its importance by government, mm-hmm. and the laws existing are at the time were basically going to the mid-1950s, the mid-1970s, and some few amendments in the early 1990s. So a new comprehensive central bank, banking, and foreign exchange management code was very much needed.
Mm-hmm. And you know, you mentioned that this was very much needed, and I was wondering if you could speak more at length about, you know, the internal challenges that the central bank was facing at that time.
Well, I think the issue of implementation was very much understood by the new management of the central bank, which is the current management of the central bank. They know very well it's not just by laws and powers and independence the world is going to be moving ahead, but they needed to empower the central bank, training, staffing, new recruits in all departments, and it was done in a very good way by keeping and enhancing the skills and the capacity of the members of the central bank and bringing new caliber and having a good approach in getting all of the teams to work together in harmony. And this is a very hard thing to do, especially that you are required to do that while the economy is running, the monetary challenges are there, the banking challenges are there, so we don't really have the luxury like those who would close their shop for a few days or weeks and to be appearing in a better shape to their clients. You need to do that while you maintain the monetary developments and the banking requirements.
Yes.
So I would really recognize with appreciation the leadership of the Governor of Central Bank, Dr. Farouk Al-Oghda, and his team. And I had the pleasure of working with that team for formally as a member of the board for a few months before my appointment as a minister. And then I continued the work and coordination.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And going back to the central banking law, one question I had was, I understand that there is a later amendment to this law, specifically that Dr. El-Akhda had to amend the law to revise remuneration schedules in order to recruit.
Yeah, this was done in 2005. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I was wondering if you would, you know, speak a little bit about that, because I actually have no details about that aspect of the amendment. And I was wondering if you could share.
Well, it was just an amendment in the law, and you can see it actually in the on the website of the central bank.
Yes.
And in the documents of the parliament, because every new law, every amendment basically had to be fully justified. And the law itself gave this kind of flexibility for adequate remuneration and support to the members of the central bank and the banking sector at large, and giving the capacity of the bank management to have some allocations in particular funds for enhancing the capacity of the workers. There have been some other changes as well in the rules of monitoring banks and their clients, but they are not many. I think they took only one session in Parliament, and they were very much straightforward. Mm-hmm. But the main pillars and the new framework very much established in the law itself. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, the central banking law was passed, I believe, in June 2003, and then the new board of directors were hired in December. And I was wondering if you could describe a little bit about how these individuals were brought on board and, you know, who was responsible for this change, because it occurred before the Ahmed Nazif government came to power in 2004.
By law, the board is being appointed by the president, and this went through the usual procedures of selection of heads of institutions. Mm-hmm. Some of the members were known. The governor of the central bank was already the head of the biggest commercial bank in Egypt.
Yes.
Some of the members were already members of the old board. Mm-hmm. Some new faces were added, and then matters had their own dynamics for the successive boards.
Mm-hmm. You know, as an observer and a participant in these reforms and a member of the board of directors at the central bank, I was wondering, what would you pinpoint as the key changes in the central bank since 2004?
The key changes, I just highlighted one of them, is basically the new management with the capacity of leading and the power and efficiency to get things done. Meanwhile, there had been some good coordination. The central bank and the country at large were basically blessed by very good conditions as far as the global economy and the emerging markets are concerned. Here we're talking about 2003 until 2008. Mm-hmm. But starting 2008 and could be a few months before that, there had been some major challenges in terms of the food crisis, the volatility in fuel prices, and then the financial crisis, in addition to some incidents that affected the tourism sector. And these were all good tests for the bank and its capacity to deal with the problems and adopt effective preventive and accommodative measures. Mm-hmm. And now I think with the measurement of success of central banks, despite the odds, the constraints, the central bank managed to do well in terms of the banking reforms, management of capital flows, accumulation of international reserves, stability in the foreign exchange market, and bringing trust and confidence in the central bank.
Mm-hmm. And I was wondering, you know, one thing that we're very interested in is the civil service reform effort, you could say, within the central bank in terms of, you know, how pay incentives were linked to performance or... And I was wondering, this is something I know that was done in the Ministry of Investment as
yeah,
well.
Fortunately, the central bank had more flexibility mm-hmm. than the usual government departments by having this kind of legal status that allowed the central bank to deal with the issues related to remuneration and having adequate support to the staff. And in areas like central banking, you cannot just assume that by good measures and good laws, life is going to be nice and easy. yes. Okay. Yeah. This was not part of the civil service reform that is very complicated, takes time and all of that. The Ministry of Investment, along with the Ministry of Finance, adopted their own policies, though the Ministry of Investment was newly created, so we had a smaller number of staff within the ministry itself. Although this small number of staff was responsible for overseeing around 350,000 persons working and holding companies, affiliate companies, authorities. But I kept the ministry very small and efficient. I remember that when I was a senior advisor to the Minister of Economy, I went to a visit to one of the ministries in the Netherlands, and I asked them about the number of staff, and it was basically one-tenth of the number of staff of our ministry, which was recognized as a small one in Egypt, Ministry of Economy. And that ministry had more responsibilities than our Ministry of Economy and Trade. So I got their own a charter of work, bylaws, and I remember briefing the minister then and told them, well, one of the dreams is basically to have this kind of light structure, an effective way of management, and to be away from all of these bureaucratic hassles, and to have this kind of an approach like I'm taking here the analogy, but with the positive part of it, like an octopus, to have this kind of small head, but with good grip and grasping of functions and activities in the affiliated entities. That was very good for coordination, no waste of money or time, efficiency, effectiveness, doing well within very limited budget, and we got things done. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But I had the luxury of that. Ministry of Finance had to create a sort of a parallel system, like the Office of the Minister and other entities. This is another way. But while you are improving the old traditional and conventional system, this takes a while. You need really to attend to managing critical issues. And again, you don't really have the luxury of let's wait until matters are going to be fixed. So this kind of a parallel system, but it has to be designed carefully with an approach of convergence, mm-hmm. that the new should meet the old and coordinate effectively with it.
Yes, definitely. Yeah.
I have to say...
So I guess the next question that I had was, you know, unlike, I think, the Ministry of Investment, the central bank wasn't starting with mostly new staff. I mean, there was a large recruitment drive, but at the same time, there are quite a few inherited employees. And I was wondering if you could reflect on this and whether this was a major challenge that the bank faced at the time.
Yeah, well, it's always a challenge. It's like trying to fix coming from Egypt with its 5,000 years of civilization, it's like, you know, to have a new building built, modern, fully conditioned, environment friendly, and all of that is an easier task compared to your work on conservation, for instance, or trying to fix an old building and make it relevant to the new world. The, something of that nature is happening with people as well. People were trained, some of them, in a very good way, but could be relevant to subjects that are not relevant anymore. People, and the central bank had been investing good in its people through training. So it was basically was a need for this kind of good maneuvering, a good pilot and a good leader to get the best out of the people, and at the same time to bring some new talents and skills and integrate them all together. I bet today if you go to the central bank, you wouldn't really recognize who's new and who's old, because all the people are going and marching in the same direction.
Yes. And, you know, just a question about within the broader financial sector reform effort, there must have been quite a bit of, you know, inbuilt resistance, you could say, and I was wondering if you could reflect on specifically what the main sources of resistance encountered were.
In where?
Within the broader financial sector reform, you know, where did the main sources of resistance
well,
come from?
Well, people normally would say, well, transfer of ownership from public to private sector is a challenge, but even some straightforward, plain vanilla kind of mergers and acquisition, they could really see some sort of resistance, because if they are going to be imposing some challenges for the status quo, changes, if you are a chairperson today, and because of the merger you will be losing your chairmanship to be a vice president or to leave or to go to another institution, people are not going always to welcome that. But basically the art, and the, again the financial sector was very good in that, is basically in preparing the road, paving the road through good communication, explaining the objectives, not just this is because of that, and we are going to be doing it, and that's it. We spent good time of explaining why this is going to be happening, and the issue of it is not just an art of applying democratic means of communication, but getting the people engaged, because that's very important, because you do the merger and acquisition as one transaction, but people are going to be living together forever. So we need really this kind of introduction and to minimize. It is never going to be a case of eliminating problem, basically minimizing the problem.
Mm-hmm. And if you could reflect on what the major successes of the financial sector reform have been. I mean, I
you need to attend the
yes,
the seminar.
You
will be there. By measures, you'll be finding many things.
Mm-hmm.
And well,
the biggest
test.
You
have a good goalkeeper, you have been training, but I've never been tested. But you get the guy to play one of those big football teams, and he manages to protect, as a goalkeeper, the objectives of his team. Well, this was basically the ultimate test. You check what happened before the financial crisis, and the biggest test to what happened was the financial crisis itself. So I think this was basically the ultimate test for the financial system.
I see.
As far as the stability is concerned.
Mm-hmm.
But now, as a person who is concerned about the financial development, the challenges are basically on providing access to the financial sector, inclusive finance, which is basically going to be my talk.
Yes.
All right?
Yes, thank you so much.